Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
And that right there means it is playoff baseball time, and it is about ready to happen here with the Cardinals and the Dodgers, as we saw that Matt Adams home run against Clayton Kershaw. We will not see either of those players on Wednesday night, but we will see the Cardinals and Dodgers on the field for the wild card game. I am Michael Wags, Wagon Connect, joined alongside by Scott Tobin. Scott, how you doing? Did that get you pumped up? Are you ready for Wednesday? What are you feeling, man?
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I'm looking forward to it. That always gets me excited and brings back that moment. I remember jumping up and down about as high as Matt Adams was when he hit that ball off Kershaw.
He absolutely blasted it. He knew it. It was one of those moments that lives in infamy when it comes to the Cardinals, and maybe we'll see another one of those kind of moments on Wednesday as the Cardinals and Dodgers do play that one game playoff at Dodger Stadium Wednesday, beginning at 7 o'clock Central Standard Time. Game will be on CBS, and that's where we're going to start tonight, is Major League Baseball. It's yesterday on Sunday was potentially a crazy day as far as playoff positioning is concerned. There were a bunch of spots still up for grab. The NL West was still up for grab. The AL wildcard was up for grab. Four teams were potentially involved. We almost had a 4-team tie for the AL wildcard, which would have ensued chaos and something I wanted to see. But unfortunately, no chaos happened. The Giants won the West. The Red Sox and the Yankees somehow found a way to win the wild card spots and will face each other tomorrow night. But all of that being said, everything that happened yesterday basically came down to the fact that the Cardinals now have an opponent for Wednesday, and that is the Dodgers. And you're not going to have to worry about the Dodgers burning a pitcher or anything like that. We are getting Max Scherzer, okay? We're getting Max Scherzer. They're getting Adam Wainwright. And it is setting up to be an epic duel, because not just that, you might see Albert Pujols starting at first base because Max Muncy gets hurt. I mean, this is, for one game, this is turning into a massive case study, in a sense, of what one playoff baseball game could be like.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of storylines going into that game. You have the Cardinals-Dodgers rivalry, all the postseasons that they've met in the last 20 years. You know, Dodger fans are scared to death because this is the last thing they wanted to see, was the Cardinals in a one-game series. And then you've got all the other stuff, too. You've got the Max Scherzer going up against his hometown team, the team that he wanted to pitch for as a little kid in the postseason. Not the first time he's done it, because if anybody remembers 2019, unfortunately, we had this matchup, actually, in game two of the NLCS, Scherzer and Wainwright, in 2019. And it was a really good pitcher's duel that, unfortunately, the bullpen kind of fell apart for the Cardinals, and the Nationals won that one. But, so we're going to get that matchup. And then, like you said, Albert Pujols hasn't won a postseason game since he left St. Louis. Do or die game against the Cardinals. I mean, that's just crazy. I sent a message to a mutual friend of ours in sports yesterday and asked him what he thought about the postseason matchup. And he said, just think, how nervous is everybody going to be if that's a one-run game in the eighth or ninth inning and Albert's lurking on the bench? It's going to be a heck of a game, like I said, with all of those things. And then, you know, the run the Cardinals have been on, the fact that the Dodgers, you know, this was supposed to be their year to just dominate and repeat and all of those things, and it hasn't really gone the way that they expected. You know, remember when Trevor Bauer signed with the Dodgers and everybody thought he'd be the guy pitching in these games? So, yeah, it's going to be fun. You know, it's going to be crazy in L.A. It's going to be, you know, 55,000 people at Dodger Stadium. The thing that might impact that game the most as we start to get into it is the fact is the start of that game. It's going to be 5 o'clock in LA. So you're going to get those late afternoon shadows. It may be really hard for anybody to hit for the first three or four innings of that ball game.
Yeah. Give a team that has a Max Scherzer on the mound every advantage to not allow a team to hit. I mean, it's going to help Wainwright as well. No question, but you throw Scherzer out there. He's probably looking at his chops going, yeah, they can't see me because of the sun and my shit. This is perfect for me. I mean, the last time he faced the Cardinals, he struck out 13. But you do have the playoff history. The Cardinals have won 4 of the last 5 postseason meetings, so there is that. They are playing well. The bullpen is pitching better than it has pretty much all season. You've got the starter in Wainwright that's been there before, 2.94 ERA or something, or 2.89 ERA career in the postseason, so a guy that's been there. It's setting up to be one of those big-time 1-0 kind of games, and it makes you sit back and think of the Chris Carpenter-Roy Halladay duel back in 2011. That's what this feels like going into this, an underdog Cardinal team going against the favorite, essentially. A team that, you know, yes, they have a down, they had a down year. They still won 106 games. They're a 106-game wild card team. That's the crazy piece of this all. So it just has that feeling, and we've talked in the past couple of weeks about how this feels like 2011 all over again. So is that the same sort of feeling you're getting?
Yeah, although since you said that, it's going to be an 11-10 game, you know. And another really interesting thing about this ball game, if we go to extra innings, I don't know if you've seen this, but the base runner at second base is gone for the postseason. Mm-hmm. No automatic base runner to start an inning. Going back to traditional baseball, which I love because you'd hate to lose a postseason game that way. But it is kind of weird when you've played that way all year long to all of a sudden go, nope, taking that away. Sorry, boys. But it's going to be interesting. And going back to the shadows, I'm not sure, honestly, that it doesn't honestly favor Wainwright more than it does Scherzer. Because Scherzer, I mean, while Scherzer's got his fastball and his slider, you kind of know what he's going to throw. When you've got a guy like Adam Wainwright who's got 4 or 5 different pitches, imagine being a batter trying to pick up the spin, trying to decide if it's a curveball or a 2-seam or a 4-seam, and you can't see it because of the shadow. So it may actually work in Wainwright's favor a little bit more than it does Scherzer's.
Yeah, I could see that being the case 100%. And, you know, Scherzer's been great as a Dodger, 7-0, 1.98 ERA. They've won all 11 of his starts, but he has struggled a bit of late. 5 earned runs in each of his last 2 starts. Now, you got to sit there and say, oh, that means he's on the downside. No, it's Max Scherzer. The dude is phenomenal. The one thing going for the Cardinals is he does have a losing record against this team. He's 4-6 in his career, 3-0 decisions against the Cardinals. He's won his last 2, though, and he was absolutely dominant in his last start. He did strike out 13 Cardinals. And he strikes out about 8 guys a game when he faces the Cardinals on average. So it's not like he pitches poorly, but for some reason, the Cardinals do seem to get to him. And you've got a team that's hot right now. Like you said, you've got Tyler O'Neill, you've got Goldschmidt and Arenado hitting well. Harrison Bader's getting on base. Even Tommy Edmonds doing stuff, whether it's getting base hits, sacrifice flies, what have you. He's doing stuff to help produce as well. If you can get a guy like Yadi going, yeah, if Sosa checks back into the lineup and does what he does, that gives you a bunch of opportunities. But the thing that has to happen is you've got to get to Scherzer early. If you can get to him early and scratch a couple runs across, that's only going to make Adam's game even better because he always pitches better with a lead. And I think if you can get to Scherzer early, you might be able to open it up a little bit later as well.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. You definitely want to either get to him early, or if you can't get to him, at least try to force him to throw a lot of pitches. Trying to get into that Dodger bullpen because it's been questionable. You know, Kenley Jansen's been better this year than he has the last couple of years, but he's still had issues. And there's some other parts of that Dodger bullpen that have had some issues, although in a 1-game wild card, will it be all hands on deck? Would a Urias or a Walker Buehler, would those guys be available to come in if they needed them to for an inning? So, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how both teams kind of handle that situation. You know who hits Max Scherzer really well? Talking about the Cardinal lineup, it'll be interesting to see if he's playing. Paul DeJong hits Max Scherzer really well. I think he's 4-for-13, something like that, with 3 RBIs and a couple of doubles. So Paul DeJong might play, and I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm not sure if it's going to happen on Wednesday, but some point during this postseason run, I have a gut feeling Matt Carpenter has one big hit left in that bat. I just have a feeling. And wouldn't it be appropriate if he did it against the Dodgers in the postseason again? Because we've seen him do it quite a few to break the Dodgers' hearts quite a few times in the postseason.
I mean, I think that would be the storybook ending to his career for sure, is if he got one more hurrah, essentially. I mean, it was kind of taken away from him on Sunday with the rain out at the very end of that game. He didn't really get a chance to have that last final, you know, I guess, appearance. And the fact that this is at Dodger Stadium, you have to hope that they can advance so he does get one more chance in front of the fans. And, you know, you could say whatever you want about Carpenter the last couple of years. This isn't necessarily on Matt Carpenter, okay? We look at him, we put him down so much. It's the Cardinals and the contract they offered him. It's not like Carpenter's out there and just not doing anything. You could tell he's still trying. Yes, it's Matt Carpenter that just can't catch up to anything, but he's out there trying. And I think he's getting a bit of unjust criticism, per se. In that instance, I really do hope you're right. I hope he does have that one last magical at-bat that does something to propel this team forward, whether it's winning the game against the Dodgers or maybe something later in the postseason that gives the Cardinals a bit of a spark to win a game or to win a series.
Yeah, I agree with you. He almost had that moment on Sunday. He hit a ball in the rain on Sunday that went foul down the right field line just by inches that looked like it was going to tie the game and give the Cardinals the lead again. So he got really close. You know, he almost had one on Tuesday night, too. He flew out to the wall, you know. So he's been close a couple of times this past week. But I just think, especially against the Dodgers in the postseason, he may come up big. And if anybody doesn't remember, go back and look at what Matt Carpenter did to the Dodgers in 2013 and 2014. The Cardinals wouldn't have advanced either one of those years against the Dodgers if it wasn't for Matt Carpenter.
Yeah, Matt Carpenter's done a lot for this team, so we cannot forget that, even with the lack of production he's had the last couple of years. He has meant a lot to this team during their championship and potential championship runs, for sure. Now, you look at, like you said, the starting pitchers. Adam Wainwright this year has been Cy Young-esque. I mean, 17-7, a 3.05 ERA, 6 straight wins, including the postseason clincher against Milwaukee. And this is what I found really surprising. In his career, he's had a long career. He's only faced the Dodgers about 18 times. 7-5, 5 no decisions in his career against the Dodgers. Got a 3.33 ERA and 96.6 innings pitched. But that's the thing that kind of surprised me a little bit, is that he hasn't – I mean, obviously they don't play the Dodgers as much as they play the Cubs or any of the NL Central opponents. But with the amount of times they have played this team, especially in the postseason, it's a little surprising that he's only got about 18 starts – or 18 appearances, not just starts, 18 appearances against these guys.
Yeah, and probably 4 of those starts are in the postseason. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, it just comes down to, you know, when you'd only play a team 6 times during the regular season, you know, depending on how your spot in the rotation sets up, you may not see a team for sometimes. In some cases, you may not see a team for a couple of years. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. And, you know, Wainwright's going to be jacked up for this one. You know, he talked about what a big deal it was for him that he got asked to pitch this game. So let's hope he keeps his emotions in check. Let's hope he's not coming up and really fired up. The thing that worries me just a little bit is the fact that he's going to be coming into this game on about 8 days rest. And if you look at his career, he's not real great when he gets extra days rest. So, you know, he may come in really strong. So you just hope that he can kind of settle himself down and not be too jacked up in those first couple of innings.
And the first inning has really been the inning that's kind of gotten him in trouble as well in his career. So if he can get through that first inning clean, that bodes well for him throughout there. And to get through a clean inning, you're going to have to go through some of the hottest hitters in baseball right now, and that's Trey Turner and Corey Seager. Turner won the NL batting title this year. He's got 8 home runs since the start of September. He's on a 19-game hitting streak. Corey Seager almost did him one better. 9 home runs since September 1st, 21 RBIs. These two guys are just absolutely on fire right now. And if the Cardinals have any hopes of winning this game, they have to shut these two guys down. Is that something that is possible?
Oh, it's absolutely possible. They're 2 of the hottest hitters in baseball. You know who two of the hitters in baseball that are even hotter than those two guys? Paul Goldschmidt and Tyler O'Neill. So they put up even better numbers than either one of those two in September. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a battle. It definitely is. It's not going to be easy for either team. You know, it's going to come out there and be a fight. You know, that's why a lot of people are saying, you know, it's not going to be easy, but a lot of people are saying the Cardinals have as good a chance of pulling this off as anybody, because these teams really do match up pretty well together when you look at what the middle of the Cardinal lineup now can do. And, you know, in that first playoff game, would it shock you if Nolan Arenado had a magical moment against the Dodgers? LA kid, playing in the playoffs for the Cardinals, trying to beat them. A guy like Jack Flaherty come out of the bullpen at some point and have a moment against the Dodgers. You know, I mean, there's just so many things that could happen in this game. It's going to be intense, and I'm going to be a nervous wreck. I can tell you that right now.
To the final out, regardless, it's going to be a nerve-wracking experience. And, you know, the Dodgers won the season series 4-3 over the Cardinals, but really the Cardinals winning those last two games and splitting that series here in St. Louis is really kind of what propelled them to that 17-game winning streak. So they have some recent success against the Dodgers. Wainwright actually won his last start against the Dodgers this year. Not his last start of the year, but his last start against the Dodgers. He won, and that was part of that two-game winning streak there. They have success against this team. They have the playoff success. They have everything kind of going for them right now. And I told you this a little earlier today. I was like, you know, it just feels like a lot of us are getting very, very excited and a bit cocky and a bit just, I guess, maybe ahead of ourselves, that we're putting this team ahead of the game in a sense that we're like, oh yeah, I mean, we've had the winning streak, that it's devil magic. You know, we've got this statistic and that statistic and blah, 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 blah. I almost feel like, you know, you're nervous about it. I know I'm nervous about it. I think more people should be nervous about this game. And yes, it's good to feel confident and be like, yeah, we know we can win this, but it feels like there's a lot of people already banking that this team is going to win and go on to the next round.
I've seen a lot of people today, you know, saying, oh, people are stupid. The Cardinals have no chance. I mean, there's a lot of Cardinal fans or a lot of people that call themselves Cardinal fans that still don't have faith in this team. But yeah, I'm not cocky or confident. I feel good. I think they've got a real shot to win this. You know, this is what everybody thought was their best chance to advance, was if you got the Dodgers in one game. So yeah, you know, I think they've got a real shot. Am I 100% sure they're going to win? No, but you can't be. You know, I think Harrison Bader put it best, and he wrote an article yesterday. If people haven't seen it, I urge you to go track it down. There's a bunch of places you can find it. We'll probably post it as well after the show. But the title of it was, you know, what happens next is what's important. What matters is what happens next. The 17-game winning streak, that was great, but you know, nobody's going to remember that if they don't play well and win this playoff game. And that's it. You know, it comes down to today, because if you lose on Wednesday, while that 17-game winning streak was cool, and, you know, it's something that no Cardinal team had ever done before, nobody's going to remember it in a couple of years. You're going to remember that you lost the wild card game to the Dodgers, but nobody's going to remember that 17-game winning streak. You know, and the coolest thing I think about that whole Bader article, and there was a lot of it that he wrote, I think the best part was the very, very end, the last couple of sentences, when he said, sometimes when you're playing and you have the whole city of St. Louis behind you, you feel like you're unbeatable. And for me right now, this feels like one of those moments. And I mean, you can just feel it in reading it, that Harrison Bader gets it, that he understands the Cardinals. And like I said, I urge you to go out and read it, because you can't read that and not really, really like and root for Harrison Bader.
Well, and it's not just Harrison Bader, too. It's the fact that he was talking about the whole team ended up buying into the we're not individuals, we are a team, and we go out there and do what it takes to win as a team. And that gives me feelings of the 2019 St. Louis Blues, too, where it was all about, let's not worry about the individual statistics. Let's worry about getting into the playoffs and showing people what this team can do. And you know, he talked in that article about the fact that he had never seen Goldschmidt smile as much as he smiled, joke around as much as he's joked around in the last couple of weeks, essentially. And that's actually exactly something we have not seen in here. And, you know, we've seen Goldschmidt smile here and there, but it really has been something that you've seen a ton of. He's been smiling, he's been joking, he's been having fun, and you know he's doing it. Arenado's doing it. O'Neill's doing it. This whole team is just having fun, and they're doing things as a team, and that's generally what will propel franchises forward in the playoffs, is guys that are playing for each other and not for themselves. And I feel like, as he stated in that article, that's exactly what this team is doing.
Yeah, and you know, that's what teams do. Good teams do. You know, they come together, they find that common bond, and they do. They play for each other, and they play for a win. And we've seen that, because they're doing the little things. You know, they're hitting ground balls to the right side to advance runners. They're bunting. They're hitting sacrifice flies. You know, they're giving themselves up to move runners over, to advance runners, to get guys home. And all of that is part of being a team, and we've definitely seen that from this ball club. And it's definitely something we didn't see early in the season that's really taken hold in the last couple of months.
that it has. So looking at what this roster could look like for this wild card game, it's really more so looking at the pitching, because you're obviously not going to take all five of your starters. You're going to have to take a couple of them. You got Wainwright, no question. They've already said Jack Flaherty is a part of it as well. But looking at some of these other potential starters that you could put in this bullpen, essentially, who are you bringing? Are you bringing Dakota Hudson? Are you bringing Miles Michaelis? Are you bringing Jay Happ or John Lester? Are you bringing any of these guys in that maybe could provide some long relief?
If it's me, Dakota Hudson's the first guy coming up. If Wainwright doesn't go more than five innings, Hudson's the first guy that comes out of that bullpen for me. So, yeah, I bring Dakota. I don't think you bring Lester in that game, because he's probably your starter on Friday night if you win Wednesday. So, and Michaelis is Saturday. So I think probably both of those guys are hands off. So yeah, I think probably Hudson's available. I think J.A. Happ is probably available. KK would make me really nervous in a game like this to have out there, just because, you know, he has been okay the last couple of times he's pitched out of the bullpen, but he wasn't real good for the most of the second half of the season. So I'm not sure I would have him on my roster. But, yeah, I would have Dakota there. I would have Happ there. I think Jack, like you said, Jack is probably a guy that will be in there for an inning. And, you know, hopefully Adam goes out and pitches six or seven, and we don't really have to worry about how many people we have out there, you know, that we can go Adam, and then you can go to the big three or big four, you know, because you figure that Whitley, you know, Cody Whitley's got to be part of the big four at this point, you know, to go along with Reyes and Cabrera and Gallegos. And so I think you go with that way. And then, you know, if runners are on base, like we said, late in an inning, you're either going to go to Dak because he's really good at getting ground balls, or you go to TJ McFarland, who's shown just an unbelievable ability to get double plays in the last month or so. So, you know, I think they're in pretty good shape with their bullpen. And actually, I think their bullpen right now, as hard as this is to believe, considering how much their bullpen struggled a month or so ago, I think their bullpen's probably actually a bigger strength than the Dodgers are for them.
I think you're probably right. I mean, you've seen what they've done, and you've gotten a guy like McFarland who can induce ground ball double plays. You've got Luis Garcia, who's been striking people out left and right. It seems like Gallegos has settled things down in the closer role. Reyes is pitching decently well. Cabrera's been pitching decently well as well. And then, like you said, I think Cody Whitley is a guy that's very underrated when it comes to that bullpen, because he does just seemingly come in and just get outs. And it seems like they're outs when you don't even know he's pitching. You know, he'll come in the sixth inning, he'll come in the seventh inning, and you won't actually be watching it. And then before you realize, you're like, wait a second, Cody Whitley got us through that inning, and we got through it unscathed. So he's a bit of an unsung hero. So it feels like the bullpen's set. We know who's starting. Are there any other roster moves that you think this team will make bringing in? I mean, it seems like everything I've read, Ali Sanchez will be the third catcher for this. There's talks that you might bring up a guy like a Justin Williams to be a bench bat, or a Yan Yepez to be a bench bat. You know, Williams has been absolutely tearing it up at AAA this year. But do you see any of those guys, you know, making the roster or making an impact in this game at all?
Probably not, unless it would go to like extra innings or something. You know, Justin Williams would probably be the guy. I don't think I'd want to bring a guy into this situation that hasn't been in a major league game yet. You know, Justin Williams may be that guy because, you know, he did have some pretty good at-bats early in the season. We saw him hit a couple of pinch home runs, a couple of big pinch hit home runs. So, you know, Williams might be a guy that you would consider because, you know, he does have at least a little bit of experience.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think you're right. It may be one of those last minute, you know, things where it's your last option, essentially. But, yeah, I could see that being the case. And honestly, I don't know if you would even bring out any of your outfielders, because you've got three of the potential best right now out there. You've got Harrison Bader playing Gold Glove caliber center field, and he's hitting the ball well. You've got Dylan Carlson hitting home runs from both sides of the plates in games, so he's really quietly had a good season. And then you got player of the month, Tyler O'Neill, who just happened to hit a slash of 328, 377, 731 last month with 13 home runs, 30 RBIs, 31 runs scored, a 1.108 OPS. I mean, the dude was just absolutely a monster, and he's out there in left field. He's playing Gold Glove defense too.
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously, those three guys are going to be your outfield, and they're going to play the whole game. The only reason you would bring up a bat, like I said, would be an extra inning situation, or if you have to make a couple of double switches or something and you need a guy to come in and fill a spot, because you're going to have Lars Nupar on your bench as well, who's been really, really good as a role player, bench player for this ball club in the second half.
And then you'll have either DeJong or Sosa on the bench too, depending on who gets the start and who doesn't. So you either have pop off the bat or you have speed off the bench as well. So there's a lot of different options that Mike Shildt has at his disposal. And, you know, before we move on to the Major League Baseball playoffs as a whole, we kind of have to talk about the turnaround that we've seen with this team and how much of an impact guys like Mike Shildt or Jeff Albert may have had on this. Because we were a couple of weeks ago even just talking about the fact that maybe Mike Shildt isn't around after this year. Maybe Jeff Albert isn't around. Maybe Jeff Albert should have been fired halfway through this season. But, you know, what kind of impact have we seen these guys make? Because you go three quarters of the season with Jeff Albert as your hitting coach and this team does nothing. And then all of a sudden they go on this hot streak. Did they start listening? Did they reinvest themselves in this? I mean, why all of a sudden did it work? And is it because of these guys or at the detriment of these guys?
You know, that's hard to say as far as the hitting side of it. You got to give Jeff Albers credit, I think, because we've seen, you know, while we love to rip him, look at the numbers that Harrison Bader, Tyler O'Neill, and Dylan Carlson have put up. They've improved. We've seen Bader and O'Neill now improve. They improved last year. So you have to say, okay, these young guys have gotten better. Dylan Carlson this year has gotten better. You know, he's gotten better all year long. You know, he's borderline rookie of the year candidate. You know, I mean, he's been really solid. So you have to look at that and say, okay, they've improved. You got to look at a guy like Edmundo Sosa and say, okay, here's a young guy who a couple of months ago people were talking about DFA him. He's no good. You know, and he's progressed and improved during the season. So you've got to give Albert some credit for some of that because we have seen an improvement from these young hitters. And then Mike Shildt, you know, people got mad at – a lot of the reason people were mad at Shildt most of the season was because he would go on TV after games and say, this team's going to play better. They're better. We're going to get this turned around. We're going to win. And he said it over and over and over again. And people were like, shut up. We're tired of hearing this. Make big changes. Well, Mike Shildt believed in this ball club, and he kept enforcing that. And he was right. It was there, you know. And so you've got to give him credit because he could have. You know, he could have said, okay, I'm going to yell at this guy. I'm going to take this guy out. We're not going to play this guy. But he didn't do that. He stuck with his guys. He stuck with what he believed was the right thing and kept encouraging them and telling them, hey, we're going to get hot at some point. This is going to turn around. And, you know, the players all, from everything you hear, love Shildt. You know, they're all for Mike Shildt. He's the leader of this ball club. So you do have to give him a lot of credit.
You do. It's hard to believe. It's hard to take in, essentially, that a guy that doesn't normally get fired up, doesn't normally get in people's faces. I mean, he did a couple of times near the end of this year. He got into some faces, but he just even keel, doesn't give anything away, totally believes in his team. And I guess maybe it's just the fact that we don't see that very often, that it kind of rubbed people the wrong way in a sense that he's not doing anything to improve this team. They continue to go out and lose, but he still continues to say that he believes in them and that they're going to win. You know, he was putting his job on the line by doing that. And it does show you kind of, A, the pull that he has in that locker room, that team stuck around and still found different avenues to try and win and then eventually did come together and win. But it also tells you kind of the balls that this guy has, because his job's on the line. And he could have just said, hey, look, I'm going to make changes. We're going to do this and this and this. But no, he was like, I'm sticking to this. This is the team I have. This is the team we're going to win with. This is the moves that we made at the deadline. We're going to make it work. And there you go. And I'll be honest, they made moves. They made good moves. And they made surprising moves. I was shocked that they did DFA Ponce de Leon. I thought he was a guy that they were going to shove back into the system and you know, maybe try and work him back in again at some point. But eventually they said, no, we're done. We've seen what we had to see. You can try somewhere else. And they did that with a couple other guys as well, as far as trades and things like that. If they didn't show you what they wanted to see, they were going to get rid of you. And it may not have been a big move. It may not have been a shocker, but they got rid of guys that didn't fit what they were trying to do. And they brought in guys, albeit older, that actually did. And yes, maybe it might be at the detriment of this team next year when you lose a Happ and a Lester, but you also have a lot of young pitchers that are seeing what was successful this year and knowing, hey, what they're preaching is true. If we do this, we will be here. So it worked out pretty well, despite all the griping that we've done this year with this team.
Well, remember all the people at the trade deadline, and exactly what you said the Cardinals did. John Gant couldn't throw strikes. The Cardinals were tired of it. You know, they'd given him all kinds of chances. And yeah, early in the season, he was doing a Houdini act and would walk eight people and still win the game. But that caught up with him, you know, and he couldn't throw strikes. He couldn't go more than four innings. And so the Cardinals said, okay, we're moving him. And people in St. Louis threw a fit. How can you trade a young guy like John Gant to Minnesota for Jay Happ, who's horrible this year? Well, what happened? Happ came to St. Louis. He worked with Yachty. He worked with Maddox. He made a couple of adjustments to the way he was pitching. And we're seeing the Happ that he was, what he won. People forget, Jay Happ won 19 games 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a really good pitcher. And so you brought in, you got rid of that guy, one of those guys that were walking people, and you brought in a veteran that threw strikes. And, you know, that's what they did. You know, they said, okay, all you guys that aren't, same thing with Ponce. You can't throw strikes. You can't pitch here anymore. You know, they did it with Oviedo. Okay. We gave you two or three chances to be in the rotation this year. It's not working. You got to go down. And you went out and you got Wade LeBlanc, and you went out and you got TJ McFarland, and you went out and you got Happ and Lester. And, you know, while you talk about what happens when you don't have them, don't be shocked if John Lester's a Cardinal next year. I'm just throwing, you know, he's already said that he's willing to do it. Don't be shocked if John Lester's not back. So yeah, I think this team, I think they did the things they needed to do. And, you know, again, going back to people complaining, and think about all the people that in May, first part of May, wanted to run Tyler O'Neill out of town because he can't stay healthy and he's too streaky, and Harrison Bader's no good. We don't want Bader. All he does is make outs. And, you know, what if Schilt would have listened to that and he would have shipped off those guys, you know? So you got to give the Cardinal organization a lot of credit. As much as we love to rip Omo and Schilt every once in a while, they've done a heck of a job.
That they have. And we would have been in the same situation that we would have been in last year, or we were in the last couple of years. Oh, why'd you trade Randy Arozarena? Oh, why'd you trade Tommy Pham? Look what they're doing this year. Because that would have been what happened with Tyler O'Neill and Harrison Bader. If they would have gotten rid of them, they would have gone somewhere. They would have succeeded, and they would have been like, why'd you trade these guys? So, yeah, sometimes you do have to be just a bit more patient than we are. We expect success. We expect winning. And when we don't get it and it looks ugly, you know, we kind of get a little defensive in a sense. But once again, these guys have been around long enough. They know what they're doing, and they are showing why they are still running this organization for the most part. And that's not to say that, you know, Mozeliak's going to be around here forever. I mean, Jocketty was here for an extended period of time, and eventually things kind of wore down and he had to move on. I don't know if that's going to be the same case with Mo, but it wouldn't shock me if in 5 years, maybe we are looking at somebody different running this organization. I don't know if that's actually going to happen or not, but it's very possible. And at that point, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in 5 years, you're going to be, Mo took over in 2008. So in 5 years, you're going to talk about 2026.
Yeah.
So yeah, at that point, you probably do need to move on. As much, you just need to, you know, things get stale. You need new blood to come in and do some things differently. So at that point, you know, you probably are maybe looking at a change, and it may be necessary. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But let's before we start jumping 5 years down the road, let's focus on getting through October and November and having some fun. But
when he's got another three World Series on his resume, I mean, that might be enough, right?
Right. Yeah. You know.
And just so you know, this is our official application for general manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. Both of Scott and I, joint application for general manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. So whoever's listening out there, just let them know that we're here. We're here. We believe in this team all year too.
So one of us can be the general manager. And what's Mo's position now? He's not the general manager. He's the
president of baseball operations.
So one of us could be Mo and the other one could be Gersh. How about that?
I used to wear a bow tie, so I mean, I can continue the tradition.
There you go.
And
there you
go from there, and then I'll let you make all the baseball decisions because you played, so you know all of that, and I'll take the heat. How about that?
There we go. I think we got it figured out.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. Well, Major League Baseball does get the postseason underway tomorrow with another big-time matchup. The Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees will be taking part in the AL wild card. The Red Sox kind of backed into their spot. The Yankees kind of had to win their way into their spot. But at the end of the day, they're both there. And this is another, I mean, just an epic one-game battle between legendary franchises. I mean, if you're Major League Baseball, you probably couldn't have been happier that these four teams are in the wild card, but you also are sitting there going, man, I wish we could have them for longer. But to start the postseason off with these two games, that's got to be pretty nice for Major League Baseball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're going to get a lot of viewers. You're going to get a lot of people in New York, Boston, LA, and St. Louis watching, and then the rest of the country going, really, those four teams? Like, for everybody that doesn't live in those four cities, they're like the four most hated teams in baseball. So, but yeah, it should be good games. I mean, Yankees, Red Sox, one game to see who advances. I mean, that's going to be crazy. And then, like we talked about, the rivalry between the Cardinals and the Dodgers, especially over the last 8 or 9 years, it's going to be a lot of must-see baseball for the next couple of days. I am disappointed, though, because I really wanted to see Toronto and Seattle get in just for a change up. And it's been so long since the Mariners have gotten in. I was really kind of rooting for them.
That and, you know, looking at Toronto, just a young team, an exciting team, some team that could have brought something like the Padres brought last year, just that excitement level. Not to say that these playoffs are going to be boring, because you're going to have some really good teams playing this year. I mean, obviously the Rays and the Astros are back in it. So, I mean, people are like, oh, yay, Houston, congratulations. They're going to cheat their way to another title. But, you know, and then you got the Red Sox and the Yankees. So, I mean, there's a lot of old blood, but there are some new blood. You got the White Sox in there as well. And then, you know, you could sit there and say the Giants are kind of new blood as well, because they haven't been there for a few years. But they are an old franchise, so they're a team that has been there a lot as well. So it really looks like, I mean, if the Mariners and Blue Jays would have gotten in, I think a lot of people would have been happy. Major League Baseball would have been upset that, you know, Boston, New York not in there, but you're drawing in new fans and younger fans as well.
Well, and you talked about the Giants being new blood. That's kind of funny, because they're like the oldest team in the playoffs, because everybody on that team is like 35 years old. But it'll be interesting. You know, the series that we haven't really talked about a whole lot is we're talking about more than wild cards. But the series that's going to be really fun to watch, just because you talk about rivalries, White Sox-Astros, Tony Dusty Baker going at it one more time across the dugouts. You know, maybe we'll see somebody get into it a little bit. There'll probably be some words said. You know, the two oldest managers in baseball, but they're probably still the two fieriest managers in baseball. So that could be really fun to watch. I mean, there are a ton – when you look at this postseason, there are a ton of just crazy things that could happen, games within the game, storylines. I mean, Yankees, Red Sox, Cardinals, Dodgers, we talked about that. But then think if you get the Cardinals, Brewers again in the postseason. All the history that they have in the postseason against each other, the Cardinals and the Braves, all the times that they've met in the last few years, you know, and then, you know, you get, if somehow it would happen, can you imagine a Cardinals White Sox World Series where you have the Cardinals going up against Tony, trying to win a World Series again against the team that he won his last, you know, I mean, there's just so many subplots to so many of these series. It's going to be really, really fun.
It really is, because, you know, if the Dodgers were to win, you'd have Dodgers-Giants in the NLDS. If the Cardinals win, you've got that matchup of historic teams as well. Like you said, the matchups between the Braves and the Brewers would be epic in that regard as well. When you get to the other side, you've got Boston-New York, and then either team winning that game moving into play Tampa. I mean, Yankees-Rays is one of those underrated series, I think, and that could be a fun one for sure. And then as you get deeper into it, you know, you could have, you know, Red Sox Astros with the two cheaters essentially going up against each other in the ALCS. You could have Yankees Sox, which would be another just fun series. And if you look at it even further, if the Cardinals make the World Series and they go, let's say they go Boston. Okay, that's, you know, 2004, 2013. You got Cardinals Yankees. That'd be a fun series. You got Cardinals Sox, like you said. You got Cardinals Astros. That could be a fun one as well. So there's a lot of big time storylines for sure. And speaking along those lines, then looking at that, you know, which of those potential series matchups, let's just go NLDS, ALDS. Let's not try and project out in the future. So which matchup between Brewers, Braves, Sox, Astros, Red Sox, Rays, Yankees, Rays, Dodgers, Giants, Cardinals, Giants, which one of those potential series is, are you looking at and going, that one is going to be absolute must see TV, regardless of which team you're a fan of?
The Astros, White Sox, like I said, because I think there could be a lot of interest. And then, you know, again, you look, jump across the National League, whoever plays the Giants, because there's so much history, like you said, Dodgers, Giants, of course, you know, the rivalry going back all the way to New York. But then you talk about the Cardinals and the Giants. And think about all the times they've met up in the postseason in the last, you know, you can go back to 1987, but you can go 87, and then you can go 2001. You know, from 2010 to 2014, one of those two teams went to the World Series every year. You know, and the Cardinals and Giants met in the NLCS. Unfortunately, didn't go the Cardinals' way, but the Cardinals and Giants met in the NLCS. There it is. I can't get it out. NLCS. You know, in 2012 and 2014. You know, the Giants unfortunately won both of those series due to some poor managing by Mike Matheny. But you know, I mean, they did meet up all of those times. So there's a lot of history there between those two franchises. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, and even like you said, the Yankees Rays or the Red Sox Rays, you know, with all the time they play against each other in the East. But yeah, I think if I had to pick, like I said, it would be Houston Sox, and then whoever plays San Francisco.
I think you're right. I mean, I think the Braves Brewers series could be very underrated, but also could be very, very boring. Those other three series, though, all could be very exciting, but I think you're right. I think just the history between La Russa and Dusty and all of that that's gone on there, I think that is probably going to be my number one series to watch outside of the Cardinals if they do make it to play the Giants regardless. I still think that Sox-Astros series could be bloody in a sense. It could be intense, and who knows? The team that wins that series could push all the way to the World Series. And then on the flip side, you know, I like the fact that a lot of people are saying that whoever wins the wild card game between the Dodgers and Cardinals is a team that probably is the favorite going to the World Series from the National League side, just because of the talent on those sides and just the pressure that both those teams are going to be under from the very beginning. It may galvanize a team and really put them into that playoff mode a lot quicker than the other three teams. And that could be enough to give you an early edge in an NLDS.
Yeah, the one series that I just have no idea what to expect out of is that Brewers-Braves series. I mean, that series could go so many different ways. Like you said, I mean, I could see that series being a series where nobody scores at all because of the Brewers pitching, you know, and the Braves can be okay pitching-wise. I could also see it the other way where both teams just slug the heck out of the ball. I mean, Atlanta definitely has a way better offensive team than Milwaukee does. So it's kind of a matchup of really good hitting team against a really good pitching team, because let's face it, that Brewers offense doesn't scare anybody. I mean, they really don't.
Yeah, they don't.
You know, if Christian Yelich was healthy, but you know, when you don't have Christian Yelich, you look at that Brewers lineup and, you know, Daniel Vogelbach has been a Cardinal killer a couple of times this year. But other than that, who scares you? I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr. is like hitting 180. Lorenzo Cain hasn't done a ton. Willie Adames was really, really hot early when he first got there, but he's not done a lot lately. You know, there's just not really anybody in that Brewer lineup that really scares you. So that series, I just don't know really what to expect out of that one. What are you thinking when you look at that series?
I'm the same way. I just don't know, because Atlanta's kind of been up and down this year. Milwaukee has struggled down the stretch a little bit. Yes, they played a Cardinals team on that win streak. They played a Dodgers team that was really pushing for the NL West title. And, you know, once they clinched the NL Central, it seemed like they kind of went into, you know, recoup mode. So you can't really look at the last week and say that's the Brewers team you're going to get in the playoffs. But once again, though, taking a week off, essentially, does that put you into playoff mode? And how long does it take you to get back into that playing style again? So it could be a detriment to the Brewers. And then, like I said, the Braves are just a team that you just don't know what you're going to get out of them. And that's something that, as a Braves fan, should scare you, because they could go on a huge run and play very, very well, or they could go out and just not score any runs. I mean, it could be like that Reds series where neither team scored any runs until like the last inning of each game, essentially.
Yeah. And what wasn't at least one of those games in extra innings when they finally scored runs? You know, and that's kind of the thing with Milwaukee, too. If Milwaukee's hitting home runs, they're going to score. If they have to manufacture runs, they just don't. Yep. And that's kind of been their MO for the last few years, even when they've been good. But they had guys like Yelich and Aguilar and all these guys that could just thump, and they really don't have those guys this year either. So it's going to come down to their pitching and them losing Devin Williams. That could be the biggest thing in the postseason, Although the Max Muncy thing with the Dodgers might be right there too, because that's an MVP candidate that you've lost for the season. And, you know, they're either going to have to play Cody Bellinger, who, what happened to Cody Bellinger this year? I mean, you look at his numbers and they're pretty similar to, I mean, he's got some more home runs, but all of his other numbers are pretty right there with Matt Carpenter's.
That they are. And, you know, you can either plug him in there, you're going to plug Albert Pujols in there, or you're going to move people around. Maybe you move a Seager around or what have you, or a Turner around. So it's not like they're hurting immensely, but it's still a big – I mean, to move a guy out of position, if that's the case, or to plug a guy in that hasn't been playing as much, it is going to hurt them, but they have talent to put in that spot. Whereas, you know, some teams, you lose a guy of MVP quality. You know, like, let's just say the Cardinals – God forbid, lose Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, who are you plugging in at first base?
That's probably a situation where you put Sosa at third, or you could put Sosa at third, move Arenado to first. There are moves the Cardinals could make there, but I mean, it's pretty much the same thing. You know, the Dodgers, but Muncy kind of has been the engine that's made that Dodger offense go in a lot of ways this year. So it's a big blow, but you're right. If the Cardinals lost Goldschmidt, they would be in kind of the same situation. And, you know, Albert is the answer against left-handed pitching. You know, right-handed hit pitching, he's really struggled. It'll be interesting to see if he plays on Wednesday night, because his career numbers against Bueno are not good. He's like 2-for-15 or something against Adams, so I don't know if they would do that. My guess will be that Bellinger probably gets to start at first. And now then
his numbers aren't much better against Wainwright, but, I understand why.
Yeah, but then, you know, if the Cardinals go to a lefty, then you bring Albert in and you move Bellinger back to the outfield. Or, you know, there's moves the Dodgers can make, you know, to offset that. But that is a huge loss in the middle of their lineup to not have a guy like Max Muncy, who is a guy who a couple of years ago pretty much came out of nowhere.
Yeah, he really, really did. So, all right, let's put a pause on that, because we've got to Wednesday to stew on the Cardinals-Dodgers series. We got to go to the NFL because it was week four. That's wrapping up tonight with Monday Night Football, a 21-7 Chargers lead here in the second half. This game delayed by about an hour tonight due to lightning in L.A., where they play in a domed stadium. How did that work? Well, apparently it was because there's openings at the very top of the stadium where some seats are at, and apparently that was enough for them to say, nah, we're going to postpone this game for a while. We're going to keep the broadcasters on the field because, you know, they're just broadcasters, not football players. We'll keep the broadcasters on the field. People can shelter in their seats, which is why they delayed the game, because fans in seats near the Lightning would have been bad. I don't get it. It's L.A. What the hell are they doing? They delayed the game an hour.
How do you delay a game for Lightning when the game is featuring a team that their mascot is a lightning bolt?
They didn't want to give them extra advantage, maybe?
Well, except that you're playing in your home stadium, so shouldn't you be trying to give them every advantage you can? Supercharge the Superchargers?
Well, Roger Goodell's there tonight, so that's probably why they didn't want to give anybody an advantage in Stan Kroenke's building, I guess.
Yeah.
Speaking of Stan Kroenke, though, the Rams did lose on Sunday to the Arizona Cardinals, one that you correctly picked in our weekly picks. Congratulations there. Way to jump on the Arizona bandwagon, because they're now 4-0. And honestly, right now, looking like they could be a potential dark horse Super Bowl favorite, and a team that both you and I believed could be a bit of a dark horse this year. They're 4-0 right now. They took down a team that everybody thought was probably a team that was going to come out of the NFC in the LA Rams. Looking at where we're at now, and you know, the Chiefs and the Bucks were the perennial preseason favorites for the Super Bowl. But after watching 4 weeks of football, who do you feel in your mind are now the favorites coming out of each conference? Is it still the Chiefs and Bucks, or have a couple teams usurped those roles?
Tampa's still the favorite in the NFC. They're going to be just fine. The AFC is up for grabs. You know, I haven't been completely sold on Kansas City going back to the Super Bowl this year just because of their defense. Mahomes looked good on Sunday, but they were playing the Eagles. So, I mean, you know, what does that really tell you? I mean, Kansas City is going to be good, and they're going to be right there in the hunt. But, you know, there's a lot of teams in the AFC that are tough. You know, Buffalo looks like they're starting to get in rhythm now after their offense kind of struggled in the first couple of weeks. Look out for the Browns. Browns have given up 13 points defensively the last 2 weeks total. Although their offense is kind of struggling. Baker hurt his shoulder a couple of weeks ago. And so he's not been right the last 2 weeks, even though, like I said, the Browns have won and that defense is getting better. I think those three teams are the cream of the crop still in the AFC. Whoever wins this game between San Diego and the Raiders, LA and the Raiders. That sounds weird too, because it sounds like it should be the LA Raiders. The Chargers and the Raiders are right there in that hunt. You know, Denver took a big loss to Miami the other night. I think it was, wasn't it Miami
Baltimore.
That beat Baltimore. Baltimore? You're right. I picked that one too. Now that I think about it. But you know, they're, you know, Denver's not that good. Baltimore looking a little better. You know, they've kind of bounced back. But yeah, the AFC I think is still way up for grabs. I think the NFC is still Tampa's to win.
So you don't have any faith in your Cowboys at 3-1?
No, I don't.
Why not? I mean, they went in and they played and they beat a decently good Carolina team. Obviously, they're playing in a weak NFC East, but I mean they seem to be playing well on both sides of the ball right now.
Yeah, I still don't have faith in Dak Prescott to win a big game. Until he does, I don't believe in it. I don't believe in that defense still. You know, they've played all right. You know, and they did beat Carolina, but they beat a Carolina team without Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
So that was a big blow. And then, you know, you look at their schedule. Who have they really beat?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, looking at it, they've beaten the Panthers, the Eagles. They beat the Chargers.
Questionably, there were a couple of Chargers kind of got the raw end of the deal in that game.
Yeah, they played the Bucs to within 2 points. Yes, that was opening week, so you know you can't really take too much. But they only lost by two. They should have won that game, really, if Greg Zuerlein doesn't miss a couple of field goals. So I mean, they played the Bucs tough, and you know, they've got obviously a weak Giants team coming up. They've got the Patriots, you know, the Vikings, you know, the Broncos, Falcons, I think really when it comes down to November 21st, that's right there, the 21st and the 25th, the Thanksgiving game. Those two games right there will probably tell you one way or the other. Those are going to be your big games if you're Dak Prescott. You're playing the Chiefs and then hosting the Raiders. So those are your two games to circle if you're a Cowboys fan and a doubter in a sense that if they get to that point and they're, you know, they're 3-1 right now. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games from there. I mean, let's just say they go 7. They're 7-2 going into that game, into those games against the Chiefs and Raiders. If I'll put it this way, if they split, if they go into that in those games 7-2 and they split and they come out 8-3, what does that tell you as far as the Cowboys are concerned?
That they'll win the NFC East and get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs. But I'm going to make a prediction now. They play those two games. The Chiefs and the Raiders both tag it, put at least 40 on them, both of them.
Okay. All right. We'll mark it down. This is October 4th. We'll revisit this in about a month and a half, and we'll see if that prediction holds true for Scott, and we'll go from there and see where these teams are at that point. Just taking a quick look at the Week 4 schedule. Scott, you went 10-5 this week. Very nice. I got a right there, 9-6. We both had the Bengals, Washington, and Buffalo. We both had Dallas and Cleveland. Both had Kansas City. You had Arizona, and I had the Rams. So kudos there. I had the Seahawks. You had the Niners. Kudos me. You had Baltimore. I had Denver. Kudos you. We both had Green Bay. We both had Tampa Bay. Now, I'm just going to put this out on the record and be completely honest with you, okay? The first initial picks that I made, I picked Chicago. I picked Indianapolis. I picked the Giants. I picked those three games. And then after I picked them, I looked at them again and I go, I don't have faith. And I made the switches. So I know I didn't tell you my picks before the game started, and I could have very well gone back and changed them. But initially I did pick those three games the other way, just so you know, but I stuck with it and I didn't change my picks. So you got me this week.
I can't pick San Francisco or Tennessee the rest of the season because they've burnt me twice. San Francisco has burnt me in the last 2 weeks in a row.
They really have. I mean, they just they I don't even know what's going on in San Francisco. I mean, they lose Jimmy G. They bring in Trey Lance. I mean, I know that it's sort of the same situation up in Chicago. Both those teams, one of those quarterbacks to sit longer and give them more preparation time and all that sort of stuff. So it's going to be real interesting to see how that plays out. But, you know, looking at the winners and losers of this week, obviously we've got Arizona in the winners category, you know, beating the Rams, moving to 4-0. They're the only 4-0 team left in the league right now, unless Vegas were to come back tonight. They had a very balanced offense and defense, limiting damage. They give up a lot of yards, though. They give up about 376 yards a game. But they're a bend-don't-break defense because they're outscoring opponents by two touchdowns. So it's a defense that still has room to improve, but they're doing enough right now to give this team some space to win.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they go moving forward. You know, they got off to a pretty good start last year, and then they really struggled in the second half. So we'll see if they can improve on that. I honestly picked them because I didn't want to pick the Rams. But I really thought the Rams were going to come kind of have a letdown after beating Tampa. I thought they'd probably overlook Arizona. And that's kind of what happened. Arizona beat them pretty handily.
Yeah, they jumped out to a pretty early lead and didn't look back. Other winners this week, the Bills, obviously, offense clicking 35, 43, 40 points in each of the last 3 weeks after just scoring 16 in week one. Defense forced 5 turnovers, so they're very balanced as well. And then you have to look at, and I know it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek winner this week, and you got to look at Justin Fields. I mean, 11 of 17, 209 yards. Yes, he threw an interception, but he was only sacked once, and they had more than 50 yards of offense. So congratulations, Justin Fields. You know what your reward is? You're going back to the bench because Andy Dalton's healthy and Matt Nagy's going to go back to Andy Dalton probably.
Yeah, you know, I mean, definitely an improvement. Oh, you got to look at who they were playing. It was the Lions.
Yeah, it was.
Jared Goff's just awful. 3 fumbles. I mean, what the hell is going on there? And every week they get down by like 20 and then they like have a mad scramble at the end of the game where they make it interesting. But Detroit's a mess. But yeah, Justin Fields looked a little bit better from the highlights I've seen from yesterday, but I still don't think he's really ready to be an everyday quarterback in the NFL.
No, they got to get that offensive line fixed. They have to fix it and give him some more time and let him sit back and absorb the game a little bit more. So looking on the flip side to the losers this week, you got to look at the Saints. They fell to the winless Giants at home in overtime. Defense gave up 402 yards passing to Daniel Jones and the Giants offense. You know, the Saints, they obviously took it to overtime, but it just felt like they couldn't finish in this game. They couldn't put the Giants away, and the Giants just stuck with it. And go figure, the 1 week I don't pick them, it's the week they win. Thank you, New York. Thank you.
And what do you make of the Saints? I mean, you beat the Packers, you beat the Patriots, you lose to the Falcons and the Giants.
It just tells me that they are they're not ready. They are still – well, they're missing Michael Thomas, I think. That's a big thing. And Jameis Winston's not their quarterback. He's not the guy. They need somebody – I mean, Taysom Hill's not the guy either. They don't have the guy right now. And, you know, I think they made a huge mistake in letting Mitchell Trubisky go up to Buffalo. I think they made a huge miss by not bringing him in and letting him be the heir apparent to Drew Brees. I really do.
Well, they can rectify that next year because Trubisky will be a free agent, and I think somebody will go get him. You know, I mean, he's had a year to learn, and he looked good in preseason. He looked good for the few minutes he played the other day. So I think he'll get a shot, and as we're talking, the Raiders are knocking on the door again. They've got the ball on the 4-yard line about to go in and make this a 21-14 game.
Ooh, maybe Arizona's not the only 4-0 team left. A couple other losers. Obviously, we talked about the Rams. Good. I'm so glad I got them in the loser category this week. And then you have to talk about the Titans, too. They lost to the Jets despite outgaining them by almost 100 yards. They controlled possession time. I mean, they just did everything that they could have to win that game, and then they end up losing in overtime. And you look at it and you go, was the absence of Julio Jones and A.J. Brown a reason behind that? I mean, they didn't have much of an offensive passing attack, but they still had decent passing yards. They still gained 430 yards of offense. Derrick Henry only got about 130 of that, so the passing game was still there. But, you know, why were the Titans just unable to shake the Jets?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when you're missing your two best wide receivers. You know, NFL teams are still NFL teams no matter what, you know, so it makes it tough. And they missed a field goal late in the game that would have tied that game too. So, you know, the Titans have been kind of a disappointment to this point. You know, everybody thought with the addition of Julio, they were really going to be a team to beat, and they still may win that division, but they've been kind of disappointing up to this point. And the Raiders do get a touchdown, Derek Carr, with a 5-yard touchdown pass. So it is about to be 21-14 in the battle of once were LA teams. I bet there's more Raiders fans in that building than there are Charger fans.
I think they said 74-26% Raiders fans to Chargers fans. So
I'm sure, and that's probably on the low side.
Yeah, so Chargers are playing a road game in their home stadium. So there is that. So, all right, before we get out of here, Scott, let's, first show in October, we got to talk about the Real Men Wear Pink campaign. So let's hear about it.
Yeah, as you said, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We are supporting the Real Men Wear Pink, and I know I'm not wearing pink, but I do have my Real Men Wear Pink pin on right there, and I'm wearing my Real Men Wear Pink bracelet. But, yes, the Real Men Wear Pink campaign is raising funds to help fight breast cancer with the American Cancer Society. You can go to our page, all of our social media pages, and donate. There's links there. You can go to my personal page. We're going to be doing some stuff. My beard's going to be pink here in a week or so, just so everybody knows. So I'm going to be sporting pink 24/7. But we're going to be doing some things, working on getting a couple of things lined up for an event, possibly for us to go out and do some stuff to help raise some money. But any way that you can help us raise money for the American Cancer Society, for the Real Men Wear Pink campaign, please do that. Any amount helps. And like I said, you can go to the link on our social page, our social media pages, my personal page. Just please help any way you can, because it really does make a difference.
It certainly does. So make sure you check that out. It's pinned to the top of our page on Facebook. So make sure you click on the link, donate, and go from there. So great show again tonight. We talked about the Cardinals playoffs matchup against the Dodgers, and just really what our favorite series to look forward to of the Major League Baseball playoffs to start. And, you know, wrapped up week four. It's already 4 weeks into the NFL season. Hard to believe. So we'll be back on Wednesday night, probably talking about the last couple innings of that Cardinals-Dodgers game and hopefully a Cardinals victory. And we've got a couple of guests getting lined up for next week and the week after as well. So make sure you stick around to the page this week and next to we let you know who's going to be coming on and when. Got some pretty fun guests coming up as well. And also make sure to keep an eye out for any announcements when it comes to the Real Men Wear Pink campaign as well. So been an absolutely great show tonight, guys. Thank you for joining us. We'll have tomorrow off as usual, but be back on Wednesday. So until then, I am Wags for Scott. You guys have a great night and a great Tuesday.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.